Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is the Snyder Is Selling sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
Oh, see, you don't get ahead of yourself until it's done, until the final deal is signed. I'll proclaim Josh was the buyer before that was done. But I don't know. You know, Snyder is selling, could have just cursed the whole thing. By the way, you know, does the hair look okay? You know, I forget, like we've done how many years without video.
I know.
I get a little flyaway working from home today. You forget, you know, we're good.
I feel like I'm in a hotel room
every
time I record.
I'm asking if the hair looks good. Well, this is the problem. Like, I'm asking you. It's like that's going to Michael Jordan. Like, how was my dunk? It's not good. So you're coming to us from Indianapolis, by the way.
I am.
Got the old Sports Fitness and Industry Association conference tomorrow. Participation, by the way, I loved it. Oh, wait. Oh, yeah, we can say this tomorrow because it's coming out. Well, we'll just say this. We won't ruin anything. One of the top line reports is coming out. But we should just say, man, is pickleball massive. It is really, really popular.
The uptick in pickleball participation, I think, is probably something we've never seen for any sport probably ever in the history of the U.S. in terms of just the scale and probably even percentage that you're seeing in just a short amount of time.
I am absolutely fascinated to see the monetization of the participants. We know that people like a lot of people like to play. Do they love to watch on TV? I'm not saying yes or no. There is skepticism as to what kind of money is available for a media deal. We'll see. Steve Kuhn thinks it'll be a top five, you know, property. Great. Okay. I'm not saying yes, not saying no. But I think there's a great opportunity to monetize just those who are playing. Give me an app that lets me reserve a court, find a partner, buy equipment, all those things. Pay what? Even if I said $2 a month with how many users, right? Do the math. I think you got a pretty good business there.
Let's get to the news, Scott. Hit people with the big news of the
week. Right to the big boy.
All right. I do. Yeah.
All right. You're itching.
Big news, Scott. Last week, news that Sportico broke. Josh Harris and his group has a preliminary deal in place with Dan Snyder. And right before we hit record on this podcast, you broke a second piece of news that deal had been sent to the NFL to do some final final checking and then goes back to get signed. So certainly the most concrete evidence we have so far, not only that Dan Snyder is willing to sell, but it certainly looks like, barring something crazy and unforeseen, Josh Harris and his group, which includes Mitchell Rales, Magic Johnson, a few other people, that is going to be the next owner of the Washington Commanders.
Yeah, if you're looking for signs, and there was certainly kind of this unabashed celebration in the nation's capital when our story came out and said that there was a preliminary agreement in place. Still those skeptical of let's not upset the apple cart, don't anger Dan, let's make sure he can go on. But yeah, every step of the way now, this is the next procedural step. Normally, as you said, this wouldn't be much. However, here, the fact that the deal is now at the hands of the folks at the NFL, they'll take a peek. If they want some alteration, they'll send it back and say, these are our suggestions. If it's just fine the way it is, also goes back to the parties for full execution, which means you sign it, I sign it, then it is resubmitted to the NFL for what I believe would be the biggest rubber stamp in the history of the league. Not only is Josh obviously a qualified buyer, he's got plenty of history on his resume in pro sports with the Sixers, with the Devils, of course, co-owned those teams with Blitzer, Dave Blitzer. But I think the owners would be very glad at this point to have this part of their history behind them.
So to be very clear, this process with the NFL that we're in right now as we record this on Monday is not the process where they approve Josh and his group as owners. It's not the full background check and the vetting. This is an earlier step with the NFL to look through the purchase agreement before Dan and Josh and his group sign it, correct?
Yeah, this would be sort of the finance folks looking and say, are there any red flags here? Is there any financing we don't like? Is there any structure we don't like? Like, if out of nowhere, this, let's say some giant publicly traded company was listed as a major stakeholder, we know the NFL does not like that. You know, we don't anticipate that will be a problem. But yeah, it's just sort of a governance look and say, all right, this looks to be in compliance with all of our rules. Great, you guys take it back, execute the final contract and then send it back to us, and we will take it the rest of the way to that final approval, owner's vote, and all that stuff.
It's such a testament to how weird a sale this is, and probably a bit of a testament in some ways to Dan Snyder as well, that every little step here now becomes news, right? I imagine it's the same for you. Everyone I talk to about this whole process, there's always the caveat. In a normal sale, X. But in this sale, why? And I think it holds up for this as well, right? This is a step that I'm not even sure I was aware of existed in this process for prior sales that we've reported on. But again, when there's so much uncertainty about what does Dan want to do? Is he going to walk away? The slightest thing might set him off and he might change his mind. When that's what you're dealing with on the seller side, I do think a lot of these individual steps just become so important because they are incrementally showing that we are getting closer and closer to a deal.
Yeah. I mean, we have said it privately, and there are some things we see in other leagues where we're like, gee, I wonder if the NFL would approve this, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they just want to make sure everything is in compliance. They don't want any problems down the road with Josh's bid. But again, this is not exactly his first sports rodeo. He's done this before in multiple leagues. And again, they're all a little bit different. We get it. But Josh is a sophisticated, not only investor, he's a sophisticated buyer, as are all of those who have been through the process and own multiple teams and multiple leagues and some on the international stage as well. So he's done this before. He's represented by more than capable people. I would be mildly surprised if there was any significant alteration needed, and I'm not sure what significant qualifies as, but any significant alteration that would force them back to the table or lawyers to start fighting again over decimal points and things, I would be shocked if that's the case. There might be something. There might be, hey, what about what's this mean? What about that? You guys sort of like spell it out differently and resubmit. But when we get the signature of Dan Snyder on one side, Josh Harris on the other, and it's submitted to the NFL, even though it would still then require final approval from the owners, I would be willing to say that is a done deal.
Let's talk about one actually thing that I do want to mention, because I think a lot of people don't realize Josh's big portfolio that you're talking about, Scott, in sports includes a small stake of the Pittsburgh Steelers, which he would obviously have to sell if
he will complete
this Commanders deal. That stake that he owns was a piece of a stake previously owned by David Tepper, who had to sell his when he bought the Carolina Panthers a number of years ago. So if we're looking for whoever's going to buy the next NFL team, maybe we should keep an eye on whoever buys this chunk of the Steelers from Josh Harris. But in all seriousness, Scott, it feels as though we are entering this era in pro sports where almost all the buyers are super owners, for lack of a better term, right? As we said, Josh is a co-owner of an NBA and an NHL team. He's got a piece of an EPL team. He's adding NFL. His partner, David Blitzer, is the first person we think to be invested across all five U.S. leagues, in addition to a number of European soccer teams. We've seen Stan Kroenke's group, MLSE, up in Canada. Todd Boehly, maybe another example. There's just so the Haslams,
Fenway
another
Sports.
Deal. Another, and Fenway Sports, another great example, right? Which added the Penguins last year to a baseball and an EPL team. It feels like we're entering this time, and maybe it's just because things are so expensive, or maybe it's because there's so much synergy that increasingly the buyers for these major multi-billion dollar assets seem to be people who already own other major multi-billion dollar sports assets.
It could be, yeah. I'm not really sure why it is sort of seems like a closed loop right now, but I mean, this would have been an open loop, and I would love to get an answer from Jeff Bezos as to why he opted not to bid. I mean, we've heard the story about years ago when Larry Ellison was bidding on the Golden State Warriors. I mean, he had Oracle had the name on the building. Larry's a huge fan. He's in the area. And the way it's been told to me, Larry bid $300 million for the team. He was told that he's about $50 million shy. He did not believe the NBA and the sellers that they had a $350 million, I think it was 350, right? 350, was that what it was? $350 million offer on the table by Joe Lacob. And he said, no, you're trying to play me. He didn't do it. And look what happened. And what are the Warriors worth now? Like, I don't think even Josh as a value investor is, by our estimation, you know, by Kurt Bodenhausen's estimation, and if you just look at sort of your valuations overall, he's overpaying for the team. Grew up in Chevy Chase, Maryland, grew up a fan of the team, right? His experience has got to tell him, let's say he's overpaying by, want to go, what, $500 million?
Sure.
Let's say we go to a billion, right? If you are intent on holding these teams, and I say the NFL more than any because they're cash flow positive, they appreciate, the asset appreciates over time, you get your write-offs, all that. If you are intent on holding onto this asset long-term, this is not a flip, this is not a 1, 2, 3 year investment, so what? You know, if you want the team, you get it, you enjoy it, you let it appreciate, and I nobody saw COVID coming, I got it, right? I totally get it. But absent calamity of that magnitude, what do you see anything, Novi Williams, anything that could possibly derail the NFL from being the most popular sport in North America, from being, you know, 90 of the top 100, whatever the number is, TV shows throughout the year, the NFL being a mega occasion where everybody comes, you know, unites a country in front of the TV or streaming, whatever it may be, brands wanting to be involved. We've had domestic violence. We have head issue. We have concussions. I am flummoxed. I cannot come up with whatever it would be that could possibly stop the juggernaut. I'll turn it over to you. If you got something, I'm all ears.
I don't. I think that a lot of the things you just mentioned maybe could harm the NFL's business, but it has proven to be Teflon in so many ways. And I think back, Scott, to so many purchases in the NFL and in other leagues, especially in the NBA, that when they were announced in the past decade, people thought, oh, this person's crazy. Steve Ballmer's crazy to pay $2 billion for the Clippers. Mark Lazary and Wes Edens are crazy to pay $600 million or whatever it is they paid for the Bucks. All of these franchises have gone up, right? I'm not sure if we have had ever in the U.S., I think maybe the Yankees in the 70s were the last major U.S. sports team to sell for less than they were purchased for by the person who was selling them. This is proven to be because of scarcity, because of the way entertainment and media have shaped up, because of how much Americans seem to like sports, so much of this international opportunity, right, which is a bigger deal for some than others. These have proven to be assets that only appreciate. I don't want to put the cart ahead of the horse, Scott, but I do want to ask you, am I right in thinking that if Josh does this deal at $6 billion and Bezos was not interested, but obviously could at some point be interested in an NFL team again, that this is a great result for the NFL? They get the number they want. They get the owner that they want out. They get him out. And then still waiting in the wings is the ultimate whale, the guy that you have not yet sold the team to, that if the next
and
team
knowing,
is...
knowing Seattle is going to come to the market.
100%, exactly. So knowing the next team is going to be the Seahawks, or not, maybe not next, but at some point the Seahawks are going to sell, that sale probably looks a little bit better knowing that Jeff does not own the Commanders, if you're an NFL owner. So I wonder if this is a great result for the NFL because you still have Jeff Bezos waiting in the wings, should he want an NFL team, to be able to buy one in the future.
Okay, can we go on the sort of your middle school grade scale or high school grade scale?
Yes.
I would give it an A- only in that I would venture to guess that there are some owners who feel that $6 billion isn't high enough. There are probably a good handful of owners who think the team is worth more. That is my guess. And now that brings me to the next level, though, when we're looking at the future of all of these sales, and particularly the NFL. The NBA opened to private capital. MLB opened to private capital.
Yep.
The asking price for these franchises in the NFL, obviously higher than the others. While I do not believe, I repeat, while I do not believe the NFL is anywhere near to approving private equity funds, whether it be the Arctoses, the Dials of the world, I don't believe that will happen. I do believe, not anytime soon, and by soon I mean like 3, 4, 5 year time frame. I do believe that heads will get together at the NFL to come up with something, and I have no idea what this vehicle will be, but something that will allow or ease the pressure on the buyers. give them some access to liquidity that is not allowed right now. So I don't know what that'll look like, but I do know that they will get together. They see these sales. If they really want this to continue doubling on any sort of scale, you know, time frame scale, they've got to provide that, because there are only so many Bezoses around who are in, you know, Mike Bloomberg doesn't want this. Zuckerberg doesn't want this, as far as we know. You know, there's only so many people who can cut that check as the rules are currently written, that there will be, let's bring the word in again, some alteration to the rules that allow for some sort of introduction of capital to the buy groups.
I have a thought on what that might be, by the way. The Harris Group is ostensibly about to spend $6 billion to buy the Commanders. They are also going to need to make another very big, probably multi-billion dollar purchase in the next couple of years, being the new stadium for the Commanders. So a part of me does wonder if, let's pick a random PE fund. Sure, Sixth Street can't own 10% of the Commanders, but is there anything that says Sixth Street can't own 50% of the Commander Stadium, right? Which is could easily be a $1.5 billion, $2 billion investment, right? I wonder if
you're going outside entity, but we say related businesses, totally. And you're saying take the interest in the related business. I like that.
Absolutely. So I do wonder if there's a way that you can kind of ostensibly invest in alongside an NFL team, not by holding preferred equity or equity in the team itself, but instead by being a partner in the construction of the stadium. So that would be my like off the top of my head hearing you talk about that. If you're trying to get creative, stadiums feel like they may be an area where you can do that.
As you know, I love to get creative, because this is all about creative solutions. More and more when I hear about global investment and hear about deals, the autopsy of deals, I hear, well, we hit a roadblock. We hit a stumbling block. We couldn't do this. Those who are capable with coming up with creative solutions often get deals done.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're going to take in the NFL. And I like your point there. It doesn't have to necessarily be in the team. It can certainly be, as we say, these teams are they're just hubs of bigger businesses. So whether it's the real estate, whether it's the media, whether there's a finance arm, who knows? Whatever it is, take a stake in that and then figure out the rest down the line. Certainly could be. And as for your take on the Pittsburgh Steelers, I agree, because remember I did that story years ago on why do people invest in minority interests in teams? One of the big reasons is a testing ground to see if they like it, to learn the ropes, and see if they then want to take a control stake. It's a way with smaller dollars to see if this is the right fit.
That's right. And last one here for you on the Commanders. We're recording this on Monday. What are you expecting, or what have you heard time frame wise? Is this something that the NFL is going to look at for 2 hours and send back? Is it something the NFL is going to look at for 2 weeks and then send back? What can we actually expect, or what can Commanders fans especially expect if this is one of the last steps before Dan Snyder, Josh Harris et al. Put their pen on paper?
How often, Edmund, am I a jerk to you where I throw a question where I know you don't know the answer? How often? Do I do that to you? Do I do that often? Do I do it? How often do I do that?
There's nothing wrong with saying we don't know the answer.
Okay, we don't know the answer. I don't know the answer. I do not know. Are the lawyers on vacation? Is outside counsel busy with something else? You know, I do not know. Should I guess? My guesstimate, this is a week to two process. I'm going to go on the over of the 2 hours and on the under of the 2 weeks.
Fair. Yeah, well, that's why it was an easy question.
If you're giving me
then
some parameters, I would go over and under. All right, let's switch gears, because we had a fun one. You and your partner were waiting to watch something the other night, right?
And oh, man.
I am. Now, what was the name of the show again?
Love is Blind is the name of the show. I want to be very clear at the beginning here, Scott. I was watching it with her. This is not a show that I have watched, to be very clear.
You were
very
you,
clear.
Were you in front of the device waiting for this to begin?
yes, but I have not watched a single episode before the one that I was planning to watch.
Okay. I mean, I feel bad. I saw it on Twitter, actually, just the whole thing starting to bubble, and then it became sort of Cauldron-esque, and I was like, what? I'd never heard of the show, so I feel good about that. I've never heard of the show, but there is a tie here. It's a Netflix presentation, and they were promising like a live reunion or whatever, and all of a sudden, it didn't happen. So another case where I think Netflix not getting into live sports serves them well. They don't have to pay the rights fee, and they don't have to tick off a whole lot of people who are waiting to see the game. I mean, this is kind of the same thing. They ticked off a whole lot of people, but man, to do it in a game, and like they're not going to delay the game because the broadcast isn't ready. At least I wouldn't think. But imagine if you have a huge sporting event and this and you just can't complete the broadcast. Ooh, tough.
I was telling Janet that whatever the subset of people that want to watch the Love is Blind finale and also watch a lot of sports, they were probably feeling some sort of deja vu last night. It's not uncommon, I think, for sports fans in today's day and age to try to sit down and stream something and get the spinning wheel, get some kind of an error message, keep getting bounced back to the home screen, which was essentially, we were hitting all three of those things. And so were millions of people, it seems like, who were trying to watch this. And I think for people, reality TV show fans, I think it's more of a new thing, right? This idea that there's something live that you want to watch and you actually can't do it, I think is kind of new in that world. So I think that's an interesting dynamic there. And one of the big differences, Scott, which you just hit on, this was a studio show that was going to be taped that they just delayed for an hour and a half and then started when they felt like the technology was closer to being ready. The Super Bowl, you can't do that, right? Most of these live sporting events, you're not going to wait an hour and a half because the streaming service can't get up. So in some ways, the stakes are even higher for sports. But I had the same thought that you did. Netflix is, we've talked a lot about whether Netflix at some point in the future is going to be interested in live sports. They have not done so yet, and they have at least publicly said so far that they're not interested. Netflix is just starting to dip a toe into these live broadcasts. I think Chris Rock's stand-up a month ago was the first. This Love is Blind thing may well have been the second. But yeah, this just goes to show you how difficult this is, right? How hard it is to get millions of people from around the country or even around the globe onto the same single stream to do something live. Netflix is one of the best in the world at this technology-wise, right? And this, and in a very big moment, they couldn't quite figure out either.
I would pay money to watch the documentary of Reed Hastings and Ted Sarandos and the others behind the scenes when this thing wasn't working. I would watch that. I'd like to see kind of the panic and the how do they get this fixed and what are the conversations? Because let's just speculate. Imagine one day, and by the way, we should not pick on the streaming services because there could be a problem with a satellite provider or sort of cable company or, you know, whatever. But imagine the Super Bowl is set to be played and for some reason, ABC, ESPN, CBS, NBC, Fox, incapable of broadcasting the game for some, who knows, some reason the broadcast ain't working. You think Roger Goodell says play the game? Or he says, hold, and if we got to play this thing tomorrow, we're going to play it tomorrow. We are not staging the Super Bowl without a global audience. I don't think they play the game.
It's such a good question,
you
Scott.
Know what? I'd like to ask Roger this question. I also would like you to ask Roger.
It's such
can't
a good
play.
Question.
Can't do it. Can't do it.
It's so interesting. And one of the things that I think makes this whole experience a bit more frustrating, I think, for consumers now in the streaming era is that you've layered on top of these potential problems your own personal setup, your own Fire Stick, your own Wi-Fi device, right? So when we were having trouble, mm-hmm. and I imagine a lot of people were on Sunday night, it was not just a question of, is Netflix down? Is Netflix having trouble? It was like, is this us? Like, do I need to reset the modem underneath my desk? Do I need to reset our Fire Stick?
What kind of freak out?
We didn't know.
What kind of freak out did you have in your house?
I went to Twitter and it was very clear from scanning Twitter that everybody was having the same kind of bounce out problems that we did. But I do think there was a time when for cable and maybe satellite dishes are the best comparison here, but for cable, if it was down, you just had a good idea that your cable provider was down. It wasn't like there was something specific to your setup that was likely going to be the problem. And this is going to be the issue, I think, for a lot of streaming services where some people in some places of the country are having no problems and suddenly you're lagged or you're getting bounced and it might actually be you specifically and not the streaming service itself.
And it also happened to the NWSL. I mean, they have a deal with Paramount Plus, and I saw a lot of complaints that games were not being seen and delayed, and it just is what it is, you know?
Those games were not postponed,
Scott. I guess you're more concerned. They were not. Well, no, they were not. It's also not $110 million or 110 million people watching in the U.S. Those, you just got to play the games. And a couple other things like news and notes. We've never done news and notes, but I was kind of, you know, paying attention this week and I saw a couple things. How about this? And I love this because we've talked about the gamification of sports and particularly baseball. The vehicle to the money from the kids is the Xbox and the video games. I thought this was great that on Jackie Robinson Day, I happened to peek over my son's shoulder. I guess he recently downloaded the MLB The Show 2023. I don't know if they've done this in past years, but I think it's awesome that on Jackie Robinson Day, even the players in the game all wore number 42.
That's great.
That is a nice touch. I thought that's really, really good. You get attention to detail. I thought that's amazing. And let's discuss this one because you didn't see it. So I was scrolling through Twitter that the Marlins apparently were going to have a Steve Bartman appreciation night. And right away I saw this. I'm like, oh, come on, really? Come on. Like, this is just awful. And then I guess the team put out a statement saying, no, they never intended to have a Bartman appreciation night. And they don't know how that got released, that graphic. Well, somebody made up the graphic. It was somewhere. So, not sure they never planned on having one, but they say they never planned it. But I was like, ooh, this is, and you were like, well, why not? I'm like, no. I didn't think that was a good idea.
I'm still of two minds. I definitely understand that that there is a dark side to the Steve Bartman story that is very unfair to him. And is probably the reason
poor guy's
why,
life.
100%. And that obviously is why you don't do this. But I do think it's a funny idea. I also do not believe for a second that this was not a consideration. I don't believe that this kind of materialized out of thin air either, but you're right. This is, it's not an offensive decision, but it's certainly the one that I think you think someone in the organization would come out and say, you know what, maybe we think twice about this, or maybe this is not the right time to have to do this as a promotion.
Not good. All right, should we do a quick trivia for you? What the heck? Why not?
Oh, okay.
Who was the outfielder who was near the wall when Bartman knocked the ball away?
I believe it was Moises Alou.
Oh, I would have bet against you. It was Moises Alou.
Look at that.
Okay, see? Now, all right, trivia number.
But I don't know who the actor was in Cheers that played Moises Alou in that episode.
Trivia question number two for like the old men people, we'll all know. Let's see if you get it. The name of Moises' father.
Felipe. Oh, I do know
see,
that.
See, this is where you... Oh, Felipe Alou. Good for you. All right. There you go. You just won respect of a whole lot of people.
Look at that.
So on the plus side, ending strong, he is Eben Novi Williams on the Twitter at Novi _Williams. I am Scott Soschnick on Twitter at Soschnick. The producer is Matt Whitehurst. Thank you very much. Matt, digital media editor, is Cora Veltman. She loves it when I remind you that the show can be found at Sporticast, which is the hub of the Sportico Media Network.